Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 3rd, 2020. Some lawmakers in Yei River State say budget of the state goes for military and security operations.
They spend 50.9 million, which is also contrary to our Appropriation Act. The state government spends more on fuel, lubricants, even feeding for our forces who are operating in the state. And this is one concern that we are always voicing to our national government.
And officials in Maridi State say rebel forces abducted several civilians.
After the ambush, which was led by NAS, when they withdraw from here, going back, we have not received any information of any fighting around that site. After the ambush, they withdrew same day and went back, moving towards Rasoul. They made an ambush between Mambe and Maridi, where some people were abducted.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some lawmakers from Yei River State say the state is spending millions of South Sudanese pounds on military operations rather than providing basic services to the people. The state's acting finance minister and law enforcement minister admits most of the state's money goes to security operations. Daniel Friday Martin reports for VOA from Yei.
Yeah, River State MPs are asking why the government spent so much of the 2018-2019 fiscal year budget on military operations when people are suffering. MP Daniel Okoroto, chairperson of the Finance and Public Accounts Committee in the State Legislative Assembly, says the spending agencies in the state government are misappropriating funds. Daniel Okoroto says in the current budget, the State Secretariat and the Ministries of Finance, local government and law enforcement spend huge amounts of money on military operations.
The State Government Secretariat, their approved budget was 90 million, but they spent 216 million, which is about 240%. More by 126 million. The Ministry of Finance as well had an approval of 40 million in the last budget. They spent 50.9 million, which is also contrary to our Appropriation Act. The state government spends more on fuel, lubricants, even feeding for our forces who are operating in the state. And this is one concern that we are always voicing to our national government.
Lokoroto says lawmakers will keenly monitor the 2019-2020 fiscal year budget to ensure that funds are used to deliver improved education, health care, and humanitarian assistance, among other things. State MP Rufus Cyrus, who represents Morobo County, blames the River State Secretariat for diverting public funds for security management.
We want the budget to be used for service delivery instead of security, because now our citizens are coming back, especially in most of the counties where these institutions are vandalized. So we want to service delivery so that we recover from what have been damaged in the conflict in the state, so that we come with the service delivery to our citizens.
MP Joyce Kiden, a member of parliament representing Kajokeji County, agrees.
This budget should go to the citizen of Yei River State for their services. We know very well that during the conflict, most of the hospitals, the health centers, and some of the infrastructures have been vandalized. So I think that this money should not go mostly to the security.
Yei River State Acting Finance Minister Jackson Abugogama acknowledges that funds were not properly accounted for in the finance ministry. He says state government has spent 100% of its budget on improving security and peace-building activities in the area.
In response to the stabilization, the government went into activities that were not properly planned for. One is to ensure that citizens are protected. Number two, going into organizing stabilization forum like peace meetings within the community, a number of confidence building conferences which had been done with the IO, and also responding to supporting the law enforcement and the security operations in terms of mobility.
Gama says once peace and stability are restored in the state, the government will embark on using budgeted funds to deliver services and conduct rehabilitation programs across the state. Moses Mawa, the state's acting minister for local government and law enforcement, is calling for an independent audit to promote transparency.
The best thing is for us to account, this money has to come through the Ministry of Finance and to the Ministry of Local Government, so that the Ministry of Local Government can be responsible in accounting for these funds.
Lawmakers say although 60 million South Sudanese funds was allocated for Yei River State law enforcement agencies, it is not clear where and how the government used the funds. To prevent further misappropriation of funds, MPs say they want the national government to take full responsibility for funding security operations rather than sending it to the state so that all state budgets are spent on service delivery. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin, reporting from Yei Town.
The South Sudan People's Defense Force is accusing the National Salvation Front rebels, led by General Thomas Rilo, of abducting dozens of civilians during a raid on a remote village in Maridi State a week ago. A rebel spokesperson denies the accusation, but acknowledges that the NAS clashed with government troops. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
NASI spokesman Samuel Soba accuses SSPDF soldiers of attacking rebel positions in Rasul a few days ago in violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement both parties recommitted to recently in Rome.
4 or 5 days ago in Rasul, there was a direct confrontation. The problem is discipline in Juba, a different thing, and forces in the ground, different thing altogether. As I said, we are not going also to keep quiet. If anybody moves in their position, we'll also fight back.
South Sudan military spokesperson Brigadier General Lulrai Kwong denies government forces attacked rebel positions in Maridi State Rasul. He says NAS rebels abducted civilians in Rasul.
In regard to Rasulu, that NAS fighters went on abduction spree in Rasulu area. They ended up abducting 26 civilians. That was the Rasulu. That was the only incident I knew of. And as a CDF, was not involved. And secondly, the time they went on kidnapping spree, they emerged from nowhere and started abducting civilians at night.
Suba flatly denies his group abducted any villagers.
We are not this kind of organization that targets civilians just like SSPDF, and these accusations that they are always leveling, it is not true. It's just to pillage the image of National Salvation Front.
Maridi's Deputy Governor Samuel Batty says he is not aware of any clashes between government and rebel forces, but also says NAS forces abducted civilians along the Yei Maridi Road a week ago.
After the ambush, which was led by NAS, when they withdraw from here, going back, we have not received any information of any fighting around that site. After the ambush, they withdrew same day and went to back, moving towards Rasul. They made an ambush between Mambe and Maridi, where some people were abducted.
Suba says Batty doesn't know what is happening in the area because the government forces don't take the roads to carry out their attacks.
For the case of the deputy governor in Maridi, they are not aware. They are just there occupying those places, but they don't know what SSPDF is doing in the villages and the roads that is happening.
A Maridi-based civil society activist who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals confirms that NAS soldiers abducted civilians in Rasul village but provided no details. The activist says in a separate incident 2 days later in Mambe, the rebels abducted 5 civilians and injured 2 others, a man and a woman, when the vehicle they were traveling in was ambushed by unidentified armed men in Mambe. The latest accusation comes weeks after representatives from the government and 9 leaders of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, including the NAS, committed to the 2017 cessation of hostilities agreement in Rome, Italy, in mid-January. The agreement, which came into effect on January 15th, also allows for the free movement of humanitarian partners across South Sudan. The parties are expected to meet in Rome to fully discuss mechanisms on implementing the cessation of hostilities agreement on February 12th. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
From Juba, we move to South Africa. One of China's top diplomats, the ambassador to South Africa, says there is no need for Africans to panic over the coronavirus. No confirmed cases of the pneumonia-like virus have yet surfaced on the continent. Ambassador Lin Songtian says China is monitoring all visitors to South Africa and says that in China, officials are treating thousands of African nationals who may be at risk. VOA's Anita Powell has details from Pretoria.
The best thing Africans can do about the spread of coronavirus, says China's ambassador to South Africa, is to remain calm and stay put. The respiratory virus has now affected more than 14,500 people across 23 countries, according to the World Health Organization. Most cases, and most of the more than 300 deaths, have occurred in China, where the virus originated last year. As fears spread globally, Ambassador Lin Songtian sought to soothe frayed nerves Monday in South Africa's capital.
We have no choice but to work together to win the battle against this virus and bring them under our control. And that is our suggestion, we hope. American friend, the European Union, all the developed countries, you are free, reassured, and relaxed. China is safe. We have shown the capacity and resources is strong enough to bring this disease, the coronavirus, under our control as soon as possible.
More than 3,000 South African nationals reside in China, and the ambassador advised them and others to remain in place. Several countries, including Australia, Britain, Japan, and the United States, have repatriated their citizens, which Chinese officials say may only spread the infection. Health officials say the virus can spread from close contact with infected people.
All the foreigners, including the American people who are in China, they are the friends of China. They are the guests of China. They are our people, our friends. So I'd like to advise them, trust China. Give the hand to us. Give us confidence and strength and solidarity. Stay well in the community, in the village, at home, in the university. You are safe. In case something happens, the system is working.
The ambassador also noted that all newly arrived visitors from China are being monitored and screened, although he did not say how many people that involved. He noted, however, that the embassy is advising all travelers from China to remain home for their first week, monitor their health, and keep in contact with the embassy. Additionally, South Africa's government has implemented temperature testing and health screening at the continent's busiest airport. The nation's health minister has assured the population that the government has contingency plans in place, including designated treatment facilities and a 24-hour hotline. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a former soldier turned farmer says he is very happy with his decision to start farming. Find out why when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
If you are leaving your country, what is the most important thing you would pack to take with you?
I have a bangle that was given to me by my dad. I wouldn't leave that because I treasure it a lot. I love it because it was given to me because of the love.
My phone, of course, that one I can't leave it behind because anything can happen. And my phone, I have to communicate in case anything happens. I have to go with my phone if I'm leaving my country.
My sewing machine, because I would want to go out there and still be doing that work so that I can still sew for people.
My diary, because I have jotted a lot of things there that I will not want to forget.
I always take my sponge, my soap, and even the container. My children used to say, "You are so funny, mommy."
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A former South Sudanese soldier who retired from the military years ago and took up farming in Jonglei State says he is earning millions of South Sudanese pounds each year from his fruit farming business. Deng Gai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
50-year-old Paul Alima Mol retired from the military shortly after the signing of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which ended the civil war in Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Amol says that is when he decided to invest in growing fruit trees, despite some widely held superstitions people in Jonglei have about fruit farming.
The belief of the people of Bor and the Dinga is that if you plant a fruit tree, when it produces its first fruit, you will die, and then the other people will enjoy it when you are dead. That belief scares many people to do fruit farming. They also have another belief. They have held since colonial time that onion cannot be grown here in Jonglei because it needs you to fill the land of human wealth. That too scares people that they are also lie.
Amol says he earns about 2 million South Sudanese pounds a year from growing sugarcane, mangoes, guava, oranges, and other fruit, more than enough to take care of his family needs.
I saw this work as very important because we just come from the bush. We had nothing to eat and the salaries was not enough. I choose to be a farmer so that I feed my family and supply this town. Up to now, the number of mangoes tree that produce in a year increase yearly. Guava, pawpaw, lemon, orange increase yearly.
Alim says if he continued as a soldier in the military, he would not have been able to send his children to school. Most youths in Jonglei choose to work for the government or non-governmental organizations. Amol is encouraging young graduates to become in state.
I
am one of the people who come from the war and now 13 years in this work. I am well off. I don't care about the money from the government. And I am not in hurry, like what people say, the salaries are late, the salaries are not. And all that because I have what to eat.
Amol urges the government to improve security in Jonglei's remote areas and provide loans to local entrepreneurs so they can create jobs. 32-year-old Akwal Cholmayul, who grows fruits and vegetables in Bor, says she and her husband Cholmayul were inspired by Amol to get into farming. Speaking in her native Dinka language, Mayul says she can now afford to send her children to the most expensive school in Jonglei State.
Farming is very important. For example, myself now, I don't bother myself to go and look for UN voucher card. I have my fruits and vegetables in the farm, and also some livestock. All this give me money to buy what I want for my family, pay school fees for my children. I encourage my sisters to stop being idle. They should get to work in order to liberate themselves from poverty.
30-year-old Sudanese national Hawet Sahid owns a fruit juice kiosk in Bor. Speaking in Arabic, Sahid says he buys his guava, pawpaw, mangoes and bananas from Paul Alim's farm.
I produce juice like avocado, pineapple, lemon, orange, guava. All these are here. The fruit from nearby farms are always fresher. So I encourage the farmers to produce more fruit. It is profiting. Profiting business anyway.
Despite South Sudan's potential to grow fruits and vegetables on a massive scale due to its fertile soil, only a small percentage of the country's land is cultivated. out of an estimated population of 11 million people in South Sudan, only 1 million households are involved in agriculture, according to the World Food Programme. South Sudan imports most of its basic foodstuff from other countries. Tomatoes, onions, maize, flour, cooking oil, dairy products, and beans are typically imported from neighboring countries like Uganda and Kenya. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
In Nigeria, the main opposition People's Democratic Party is pleading with the United States to spare ordinary Nigerians from restrictions linked to recent travel ban. Nigeria, Eritrea, Tanzania, and Sudan are the latest African countries added to the Trump administration's travel ban.
The major opposition political party, the People's Democratic Party, has told Nigerians to hold President Muhammadu Buhari and his All Progressives Congress responsible for whatever negative impact the proposed travel sanction will cause our citizens. I will say this because even at home in Nigeria, the state of insecurity is biting harder and harder. And as such, the executive led by President Muhammadu Buhari appears indifferent or just paying lip service to fighting insecurity. Our fellow impact, as we speak today, traveling to Kaduna by road or by train has become an albatross to Nigerians. It is worse in the northeast, where people can no longer move from Damaturu in Yobe State to Maiduguri in Borno State. Between Abuja and Lokoja, which is about 2 hours journey, it's nearly in difficult on a daily basis. Computers are being shot, some are being killed, and we face a level of terrorism that is strange to us in Nigeria. And for America, for the United States of America, to now impose travel sanctions on our country on the basis of the inabilities and the inefficiency of the sitting government is very worrisome.
But let me say that the president's media advisor, Mr. Femi Adesina, issued a statement saying that the Nigerian government will work with the U.S. government and Interpol and other stakeholders to ensure that all updates are properly implemented, to make sure that everything probably that the U.S. is concerned about is taken care of.
Nigerians are aware that the government of President Muhammadu Buhari enjoys making promises that it has never fulfilled. It enjoys paying lip services to issues that are of major concern to Nigerians. For instance, in Nigeria, the National Assembly, both the Senate and the House of Representatives, has called on Mr. President to rejig the security architecture. He's got promises. He hasn't done anything. He has even said that he was surprised at the level of insecurity in the nation. That is the commander-in-chief that promised Nigerians in 2015 that he would lead from the front. It's unfortunate for us in the opposition political party, the People's Democratic Party, we appeal for Nigerians. However, we appeal to the United States of America to ensure that in imposing these restrictions or bans, that the ordinary Nigerians do not suffer heavily from whatever decision is taken.
That's Kola Olubondia, National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty from Abuja about recent travel ban on Nigerians. Civic groups, political parties, and the government are pleading for the women of Cameroon to vote in the next week's local and parliamentary elections, despite threats by separatist groups who have vowed to disrupt the polls. Female candidates and women who campaign on behalf of others fear their efforts may amount to nothing if women do not come out to vote. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Unity! Justice!
Unity!
Justice!
Unity!
Justice!
Representatives of NGOs and government ministries are joining political parties at rallies in Cameroon's capital in what they call a special campaign for women to perform their civic duties next Sunday. Female candidate Alvin Yinda says she is impressed with the initiative because the absence of women from polling stations on the day of the elections will give men an unfair advantage.
Dans l'Union, nous avons dit l'OFRDPC.
She says female candidates of her Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM, have decided to encourage all women who registered to make sure they vote massively on February 9, 2020. She says they are working with all contesting political parties to make sure women take part in the decision-making process. Muma B. Yvonne, national coordinator of the NGO Cameroon Women's Peace Movement, says the campaign is for women to support lists that have a majority of female candidates. She says these are the only ones they are sure can represent the views of women.
We need to be there so that we impact the decisions that affect us like women. If we need a health center or women need to attend antenatal in a certain area, a woman is well placed to understand the plight of women. Women have a different way of looking at governance. But if we are not there to influence policies, how do we get that level playing ground that we all dream for?
The elections were called by Cameroonian President Paul Biya last November. Before then, delegations of women, led by the NGO More Women in Politics, visited towns and villages, encouraging females to run for political office. Political parties agreed with the NGO and increased to 42% the number of female candidates in the race. But traditionally, many women do not vote because they are restricted by their husbands and communities who believe they should carry out only domestic chores or go to the farms. Some women fail to participate due to illiteracy. This year, it is feared the number of female voters will further decrease because of the separatist conflict that has killed at least 3,000 people in Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions. There, armed groups fighting to separate the English-speaking regions from the French-speaking majority country have vowed the elections will not take place. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
From Yaoundé, we move to Blue Nile State in Sudan with this song, Assalam Wassal. We've been listening to Voices from Blue Nile State in Sudan with the song Assalam Wassal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We thank you for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
You're my family, that's the land, that's the land.